You're listening to Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association with host John Hansen. Today's show is sponsored by attorney Patrick Dolan from Conti and Dolan and attorney Michael Leonard from Leonard Trial Lawyers. Now, here's John Hansen and Let's Get Legal.
At 1:11 here on WGN. Oh, what a very wonderful Saturday afternoon it is here in Chicago. We appreciate you giving us some of your time here on 720 WGN. Patrick Dolan's to my right. He just got to meet Wendy for the first time.
Yeah.
Ever. Isn't she wonderful?
She is wonderful. I mean, I love listening to her, and she's so nice.
Wendy is the greatest. Her and I are good buddies, and she's a better hugger than David Hochberg.
Wow, okay. Well, not surprised. I don't know.
David's a good hugger, yeah, too, but I just love a good hug from Wendy Snyder.
And that's Wendy gave me a really good hug, so I understand.
Isn't she the best?
Yeah, she's great.
She's wonderful.
And she's so fun to listen to. She is.
Yeah, she was. David's great, too. Don't get me wrong. She was filling in for Hochberg. She can do anything here.
You're great.
Well, look at that.
Karen's great.
Appreciate that. Yeah. Karen Conti is who you're referring to there. This is Patrick Dolan. He is business partners with Karen Conti at the law firm Conti and Dolan. Was that done alphabetically or order by rank in just terms of who could beat the other person up? Because I believe Karen might be able to beat either one of us.
Yeah,
up.
We decided to do it by arm wrestling, and I lost, so I'm second.
You're second. So.
Yeah,
she does family law.
She does.
And you do employment
law.
I do. And that covers a wide range of things. You used to spend time working for more, and you still do work with some businesses, but that was primarily who you worked for. You worked for businesses, right?
Yeah, so I started out for the first 10, 12 years working at large law firms defending companies, large, medium, and small-sized companies in employment matters.
You worked for the man.
I did, yeah. And, you know, that was interesting and fun. There's a lot of counseling and policy-related stuff and litigation. And then I moved to represent employees, a lot of my clients, management, non-management level, executive folks who have a whole bunch of different issues.
Why'd you make that switch?
I found that I just enjoyed helping people. And I know when you're helping a company, to some extent, you're helping people there too. But
right.
I just found the relationships more rewarding, and I just liked it more.
Yeah. And that's where we found you, or
yes,
you found us.
Yes.
Either
something.
Way.
I don't know how that happened. Maybe through Karen. I don't know.
Probably through Karen. Yeah. I'm thrilled that we did. Because
thank you, John.
So many people, first of all, you're a great person. Second of all, so many people have employment questions about things happening in the office. And there's so many things in the news related to jobs. I mean, it makes sense. For the most part, we all have worked or worked at some point in our life, and we've encountered issues that we sometimes feel are strange. Sometimes they border on illegal.
Yep.
And you kind of help decipher the differences.
Yeah. And, you know, people oftentimes just want to know if what happened to them is legal or not legal. And if it was illegal, then what should they do about it? Or if they're in a situation where they're not sure how to handle an issue at work with a coworker or a boss or something like that, they'll ask me to say, you know, what should I do next? How do I handle this? I don't want to lose my job. But at the same time, I think I'm really being treated unfairly. And so there's a lot of sort of sensitive issues there to work through and help folks with who want to remain at their job. Then, of course, there are people who have been terminated or they want to leave because of harassment or illegal behavior, and I help those folks with their separation agreement.
I also feel like so much has changed in the last 10 years at the workplace. It's been a real decade of change. I mean, in many different ways, but especially in the relationship between bosses and employees, further advancements in the understanding and fighting the stigmas of sexual harassment. Unions have grown in, popularity. I mean, Gallup polls show that unions are more popular. There's been a lot of workplace change. Agree or disagree?
Totally agreed. There's been a ton of workplace change, and a lot of it has to do with protections surrounding mental and physical health issues in the workplace, federal and state law, and actually local law, too, that has grown in the last 8 to 10 years that protects individuals who are suffering for one reason or another at the job. Those kind of protections didn't really exist. We had one major law, the Family Medical Leave Act, but that's been expanded, and now you have a lot of local and state laws that are really focused, John, as much on mental health issues in the workplace as physical issues. And you have employers who are now recognizing those struggles a lot more than they used to and addressing those by way of accommodation. So companies aren't perfect. People aren't perfect in how they handle the situation. So there's a lot of learning and there's a lot of stuff that you have to go through to get through those issues in the workplace, but at the same time, the law's really grown to protect people who are struggling.
I feel like the 20th century was a lot of federal government changes. At the early parts of the 20th century, you have labor laws being placed in, you have the advancement of the five-day work week and the 40-hour work week, paid time off, all those sorts of things, FMLA, a lot of different laws. I feel like the last couple decades, maybe it's a factor of just we are a splintered country in many ways, and it's hard to pass federal laws, that now we are the states and the cities are the ones kind of picking up the torch from the previous generations.
I think that's right. And I think there are a lot of gaps in federal law that have been addressed at the state level, starting with some more progressive states like California, New York, and stuff like that.
Illinois, too.
Illinois, for sure. And those states have sort of led the way to becoming more national in terms of those protections. But as I said before, those are really addressing employee health issues more than anything else. Sure, we've expanded upon the protective categories under federal and state discrimination, harassment, and retaliation law. That's really expanded too, to protect like sexual orientation and a lot of issues like that at the state level that did not exist at the federal level, to your point. So state law has really filled in a lot of the gaps on many different levels that the federal law doesn't protect employees.
Yeah.
But now it does, though. But states have driven that.
Yeah. I also feel like you mentioned some of the progressive states. More conservative states, so-called red states, have also put pushes in for right to work, things like that. I think that these states, you know, while we diverge in many different social aspects, are also diverging in their workplace culture, too.
Yeah, and that's why I said, you know, it really started with some big states like New York, Illinois, and California years and years ago with some of these issues. But those have rolled into what folks consider to be more traditionally red states as well. So it's the state laws that have driven a lot of employee protections. And here in Chicago and Cook County, we have a lot of additional protections, too, on top of state and federal law.
Boy, we got deep there. We went through the whole history of the change.
Yeah, but I mean, you're right. There's a lot of change and a lot of positive change for employees and a lot of more healthy work environments.
Okay. That's your opinion. Some people still want kids working in the coal mines, Patrick.
Sorry.
I'm just kidding. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. We would love for you to call in or text in with any issues you're having at work, or maybe a new job, or maybe you're leaving a gig and you want to talk through something that's a little strange that happened, maybe. We'll get to some of that, and I also want to get to what happened at the Pepsi plant with Patrick Dolan. By the way, if you're running out of the car, 312-332-7800. That is Patrick Dolan's number. Same with Karen Conti. So anything with your family or anything with your employer, you call that number. You talk to Karen or Patrick, 312-332-7800. Our number, 312-981-7200. We'll do more after this on WGN. Patrick Dolan, you and I were just talking about the Wintrust Magnificent Mile Lights Festival. And I'll never forget, because of the schedule sometimes on a Saturday, as listeners know, we get bumped around on our times because of the Northwestern or Black. Today it's Blackhawks. We're cut early. We're going to 2:30. But I'll never forget one year, we're also in Studio A today, which is unusual for us. We're looking at the lake. It's normally beautiful. We're on Studio D, looking at the river. I mean, like the perfect view of the Lights Festival, because I can see Michigan Avenue, I can see the bridge, et cetera, et cetera. From where I sit in the studio, though, I am facing the opposite direction. But I'll never forget Stephen A. Leahy, who we know and love, was sitting in the chair across from me. And he could not get through the interview because our show was timed perfectly to the fireworks show.
Yeah.
And I literally would see the firework reflection in his cornea, on his eyeball. And he just could not hold a thought because it was so magnificent and
over
exciting.
Over your shoulder.
Yes.
You're looking at it.
And like our sound, our windows here are very soundproof.
Yeah.
But a big thunderclap or a firework 2 feet in front of the window, you can hear. So I'm trying to have a tax law conversation. And at some point we just said, what are we doing? Let's just turn around and look and tell people what we're seeing.
It's such a fun event.
It is.
It's a great event.
Okay.
Kicks off the holidays.
Not so fun. And we talked about this on Worker Wednesday, on Your Money Matters on Wednesday, with Ed Maher, who's on the Workers' Mic. They'll be chatting about this more tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. here on WGN. But big news, a bunch of workers showed up, 200 employees, to PepsiCo on the South Side, the big plant that's been there for a long time, and it's no more. They're all laid off. And that's a shocking thing to go through. I can only imagine. And now people are maybe screaming foul that they violated some rules here. What was your initial thoughts on the story when you read what was going on there?
Well, my initial thought was maybe they did violate it, because under the Federal WARN Act, Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act, they need to provide 60 days notice. And by notice, it means provide compensation and benefits for those 60 days before a plant closing or a quote unquote mass layoff. That's the requirement under federal law. Illinois also has its own WARN Act. And the difference is the federal law applies to 100 plus employee companies. Obviously, PepsiCo sees that. Illinois applies to 75 plus companies. So a little bit smaller companies have to apply with the same restrictions, right? But here's the thing about Pepsi, though. Now it's, you know, I think what they're saying is, well, you know, we provided the employees with, you know, severance in the amount of 60 days. Right.
That covers us under the law, they think, because if we had to provide the state 60 days notice and we had to pay people throughout, it's the same thing. Yeah. Is it not?
No, it's not. Well, maybe, but not necessarily, John, because if they have a severance plan or a policy, or if you have individuals within that group who were laid off as a result of the plant closing, then that is in addition to what they're entitled to under the federal and state WARN Act, which is 60 days notice, all your compensation and benefits. In other words, you can't change anything that employee is entitled to during those 60 days. Can't lose your job, need to be paid, need to keep your benefits for those 60 days. Then if the company has a severance plan or policy that applies to some or all of those people, that's on top of it. Okay, so I don't know the answer to whether Pepsi has a severance program that mandates additional compensation for those people who were laid off. So it's not entirely clear that them saying, hey, we gave them 60 days, you know, comp and benefits. We may not have given them the notice, but that's fine. I don't know that it fulfills the legal obligation.
It seems like a weird workaround. Isn't it still they are supposed to notify the state?
Yes.
Because there's other things at play here. When factories close, when things happen, folks often want to help the town, right? There's often a lot broader implications when you shut down a factory than just the employees that work there, right?
That's correct. And what you need to do is provide notice to the local economic, you know, benefit. There's a whole
bunch. Well, everyone should know.
Yeah, right. But my point is that the notice is you know, almost as important as the compensation, because what you're doing is giving folks time to find another job. And there's a lot of services that are triggered locally as a result of the notice under federal state law to help those people who now are not going to have a job 60 days later. So it doesn't suffice under the law. It's not good enough under the law to say, we'll pay you 60 days comp and benefits. No, the notice is there to protect employees and the local economic development folks to address those issues. So it's not the case that Pepsi's complied with the WARN Act just because they say we paid them for 60 days.
When someone files with the WARN Act, do those employees usually then work for 60 days? Like they say, hey, we're shutting this down, but not for 60 days. Or normally is it like, hey, we're giving you 60 days notice, but you don't have to keep showing up to work?
You know, in my experience, it's both. I don't think there's an usual versus not unusual. It just depends on the plant, what's going on with the plant closing or the mass layoff in terms of whether those folks need to work or not. Most of the time, though, John, they're not working for those 60 days.
Now, I know there's going to be a lawsuit filed, or maybe it already has been, so we have to wait for this to play through the courts. As of right now, they're claiming the workers are that they didn't file for the WARN Act. We don't know for sure. We'll have to wait and see how this works out. My big question to you, I've got 30 seconds of the news. Wouldn't Pepsi know that? They're a giant company. Why would they evade a well-known law that I know? And I'm a dummy when it comes to this stuff.
I don't know how to answer that question. Of course they should know.
Like, how would they make that mistake?
I don't know. And maybe they think they complied.
Maybe we gotta wait.
But maybe they did comply, John. We don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know.
All right.
It's possible.
All right, okay. 312-981-7200. We want your questions for the next half hour after the news here on WGN. This is Let's Get Legal. We are powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Patrick Dolan's to my right. He's an employment lawyer of Conti and Dolan. Yes, of Karen Conti fame. Patrick, we're getting some questions about the Warn Act.
Okay,
you ready to take them?
Yep.
Let's go to Jane, who will, of course, be careful not to say her company's name. Jane, you got some not so good news, huh?
Yes. Hi. I was notified a week ago Tuesday that I'm being laid off, and my last day is November 7th. It's a very large corporation whose corporate office is not in Illinois, and I am a full-time remote person, and I wondered what the 60-day notice.
Oh, we just lost Jane. I hope she's still listening. Call back if you can, Jane. We'll get you on the line.
Yeah, that was enough. That's enough information to address the issue, though.
Well, with minus one question, but go ahead.
Okay, Neil, what I was going to say is, it depends on how many people were laid off with her.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, that's the question. So certainly not if it was an individual layoff or even a small group, or could be even a large group, but because there are certain numbers that especially a large employer has to meet, usually 250 employees or more have to be laid off, right? So, and there's another standard there too, which probably doesn't apply to a large company, but you got to do some math, and it can't just be like a small group of folks. It's got to be a large group of folks. If you're talking about a mass layoff, a plant closing is a different thing altogether.
But if just an individual or a couple people being laid off at a big company, the 60-day noticing does not exist.
No, it does not.
Okay. Patrick, I'm going to ask you one question.
Yes.
Oh, would you mind?
Just one.
I'm going to turn off your mic. Rotate it so you talk into the front of it. You're talking to the side of your microphone. You see that? There we go. There we go.
I've never done that before.
Yeah, that's okay. You never have either. And there you were talking to the side of your mic. It still sounded okay, but I want your rich timbre to be fully appreciated by the WGN audience. 312-981-7200 if you have any questions. Yeah, the Warn Act is confusing, and every time we talk about it, people do call in and say, wait, I was laid off. I wasn't given 60 days notice.
Yeah.
For the most part, it is not enacted. It's
I would go even further, John. I would say it's rarely triggered by a layoff or a plant closing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. People on the text line, someone wanted to know, what is the standard for severance? How do I know what my severance is? Is it in the handbook? Should I have been told in a contract? Is it word of mouth amongst the employees? It could be a few of those things.
Could be all of those things. So companies could have a severance policy. That's one place. It's usually not in the handbook. It's usually a separate policy. It can be in an offer letter or an employment agreement or something you got from the company individually. That could state severance. It could be in an equity document if someone has shares in a company. A lot of times the severance will be included there. And this is what people often forget, John, it can also be if the company just pays people severance under certain circumstances. That can trigger an obligation on the part of the company to pay other folks severance, because that's a contract.
Right. So meaning, let's say you get laid off, you didn't get severance, or you got 2 weeks severance, and you're like, I feel like I deserve more. Judy, who used to work here, when she was laid off last year, they gave her six months, and I worked here way longer than Judy. Same job, shouldn't I be getting that too?
Maybe, yeah. It's that if it's done repeatedly, because it's not just sort of a one-off, to rise to the level of being an enforceable contract, it's got to be a bunch of folks who are similarly situated, right? Same or similar job, that kind of thing. They were all paid severance. Let's just say 2 weeks for each year of service or something like that, and you were not offered that. You have both a potential contract claim, but then, John, as we've talked about a lot of times, you could have a discrimination claim. So why are you being paid less than other folks? And there's a whole bunch of protected categories that could fill that in to help you leverage that severance.
So protected categories extend beyond when you are employed. They extend to the moments and even a severance.
Absolutely, because if you're not being treated the same, and it's based on gender, age, sexual orientation, disability, there are a lot of protected categories. That is a benefit that you're entitled to. And since you're not being given the same amount of severance, that could be discrimination.
Well, I have a squirrely question for you.
Go ahead.
So let's say you can't discriminate based on age. Right now, there is no law against discriminating people because they're younger, right? It has to be because they're older.
Yeah, so you have to be over 40, that's a protected category, and treated worse than somebody under 40. Now, there are a couple places in this country who are turning that on its head.
Meaning if you're 25 and you feel like you're treated poorly or less than people that are over 40,
yeah.
As of right now, in most states, you can't contend anything.
It's every state. I'm just saying there's some places in this country. Maybe it's going to grow. We don't know.
But are you talking about California?
In New York City. But I hesitate to even say that because, you know, right now, the protected category, over 40 being treated better than worse than somebody under 40.
Okay. I guess where I was turning this on its head was, let's say you were in your 20s and you said, I didn't get the same severance as someone in their 40s. Your company would say, well, it's based on a policy based on how long you've worked here.
Yes.
And that doesn't violate any discrimination.
No, that doesn't. If it's just age based on that, no. But it could be a breach of contract.
Right. Okay. As you were kind of talking about, well, it has to be more than maybe one person got it. It has to show a repeated pattern in the company. Broadly speaking, these laws that protect us, that protect employees, there's some nebulousness to them, meaning they're up to interpretation in some ways, right? And ultimately, it's how well you could argue before a judge, if it got to that, or a jury, that this company had a repeated history of giving severance. Odds are it won't get to that point where they're going to be brought in front of a jury. It could be. But I guess what I'm asking is someone contacting you, they feel like they didn't get the severance they wanted. You talk through it with them. If you feel like there's something wrong, you're going to send a letter or call that company, correct?
Yeah, I'm going to send a demand letter.
And sometimes that is just enough to say, have a company be like, sure.
That's most of the time how it works.
Yes.
Because most people don't litigate for a whole bunch of really good reasons. Most people don't litigate. Stressful, time-consuming, expensive. At the end, you may end up with nothing better than what you could have gotten, you know, negotiating a severance through a demand letter, which is how I spend most of my time, right? Mm-hmm. But articulating that claim, John, in that demand letter, so many people got severance pay. Why not my client? You have a contract, right? Based on that and maybe a whole bunch of other things. But you're leaning on that as leverage to negotiate your severance.
I guess what I'm asking, broadly speaking, and thank you for answering that, is that some people feel that they were entitled to an extra month of pay or something. But they say, I'm not going to call Patrick Dolan. This is going to go through so many, this is going to take months, going to cost me more money to pay Patrick than it is in the severance that I was entitled to. Maybe under the mistaken belief that these things get dragged out forever, when in fact, oftentimes, when they work with you, they don't.
They don't, no. Now, it's not a number of months. It could be a few weeks, a handful of weeks. But there's also, you know, the two words that people love to hear, contingency fee. So if somebody comes to me with a separation agreement and says, geez, I think I'm entitled to a lot more, my contingency fee is on the difference, right? So it's really not money out of their pocket often. Not every time, you know, we can do that deal, but that's often how it is. So
Right. Have
the conversation, see if you have claims. I'll tell you if, you know, you've got some good arguments to get a better severance pay, you know, through that separation agreement. And then we can work out a deal that works for you. But that's typically how it goes. And at the end, most people don't sue.
I just feel like companies that, I don't want to say they're knowingly breaking the law. Some people, there's mistakes that are made, right? Obviously. But I think that companies are under the assumption that you're not going to fight it. And I think they're right for the most part.
Well, first of all,
not that you aren't, but most employees
won't. Yeah, well, most employers aren't because most employers are not going to hire a lawyer, right? And for a whole bunch of reasons, I get that.
Sorry, they think most employees won't fight it.
That's what I mean. Most employees will not hire a lawyer to fight it. Then they recognize that, and it's a business decision, 100%. Even if they know an employee's or think an employee's going to hire a lawyer, sometimes it's still a business decision because, like, oh, if we just pay this person a couple months more severance, it's probably going to be enough, and they'll sign a release and it'll be over. Sometimes yes, sometimes no, and sometimes we do have to file a claim with like the EEOC for discrimination or something like that, or the Illinois Department of Human Rights, and we do have to file a lawsuit to actually, you know, remedy those wrongs. But oftentimes you can work it out by way of a severance negotiation.
Okay, 312-332-7800 is how you reach out to Patrick Dolan. 312-981-7200 is our phone phone number. We'd love your calls right now. Getting some texts as well. Love to hear your voice. What's happening at work? Was it weird? Is it illegal maybe? Or maybe not? We'll get a good answer for you. 312-981-7200. And I got a financial question, and I know this is not the financial show, but I will answer it. After the break here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. Sue, don't go anywhere. We're going to take your call. I did get a text, Patrick, about financial things, and I want to answer that. All right, you ready for this? This is good for, this is work related too, though.
Sure.
Because someone asked me, they said, well, they said some nice things at the start of it. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening to all the shows I host. They said that they have heard me mention several times that if a young adult in their first 10 years of working save $100 a month, that they'll be able to put aside a much larger amount of money than if you waited until 30 and did it for 30 years. And then they asked, what sort of things should you be invested in? Patrick, I'm going to run these numbers for you. I don't know if this boggles your minds, or you probably already know this.
It probably will.
This is compounding interest. Mm. All right. Let's say, sorry, I have a little lingering cold.
Okay.
Let's say at the age of 22 years old, you start saving $100 a month. Okay. And you do it for 10 years and you stop. Meaning you don't put another dollar in your retirement.
Okay,
so at the age of
32,
you're done.
I'm with you.
You shouldn't do that, but let's say you do. You let that then sit for 30 more years. Okay. So now you're 62.
Yep.
You would have $242,000 saved
up. I'm shocked by that. You're right.
But hold on.
Oh.
There's more.
Oh.
So remember that number, 242.
Got it.
In situation two, you're in your 20s. You're not thinking about saving. You don't really want to do it. And at 32, you go, wait, I should start saving. And you put $100 a month in at the age of 32, 10 years after the other person did it.
Mm-hmm.
And you save for the final 30 years of your career till you're 62.
Okay.
The first person who didn't stop, who didn't save anything the last 30 years had $242,000. The person that waited to the age of 32 to start ends up with $166,000.
Gosh, that is crazy.
And then the ideal situation is the person who starts in their 20s and keeps going.
Yeah.
Just at that $100 a month.
Yeah.
If they do it for 40 years, then the first 10 years and the next 30 years, they have well over $400,000. Obviously, ideally, maybe you're able to put in more as you go. You're able to grow it. You keep it going. But that is insane. And that's compounding interest.
Math is crazy, John.
I love that. Someone told me that fact when I was 21 years old, working in radio in Champaign, Illinois, making nothing, but said, you're also living on nothing. Your beer budget is more than your rent here in Champaign. And this person convinced me to put 26% of my salary away. It wasn't much, but thank goodness that person pulled me aside and did it. And I was lucky and privileged to be able to do that. It wasn't much.
And now you're a multimillionaire.
No, I'm not. But that was good to do, is all I'm saying. So I would not have known that unless someone pulled me aside and said, hey, John, do this. And anytime I find someone at any workplace I work at that's in their 20s, I try to impart that to. And now that I have this megaphone, yep, Iridian's nodding, I do it for Iridian.
Good.
Now that I have 50,000 watts to talk it to, I know most of our listeners are not in their 20s or 30s.
Yeah.
I know a lot of you are parents or grandparents. Impart that wisdom to those people, and that is generational change. You have changed their life if you can convince a 22-year-old in their first job to start the day they start. And then the person asked, what should they be investing in? I don't care. Do a 401k on a schedule like they do retirement plans that have a set retirement date. Start there. It doesn't matter. In your 20s, the economy could blow up, and it will three or four times, five times before you retire. That's okay. If you don't have a 401k at work, get an IRA. There's income limits on how much you can put in and what, but trust me, you'll be under it at the age of 22. So do it. Put it wherever you can and do it before it comes out of your paycheck, either as pre-tax or post-tax. For all those details, listen to Your Money Matters. The point of today is if you're driving around or you're going to see a 22-year-old today or someone around that age, just shake them politely till they get the point.
I have three kids in my 20s. I would say one is already well down the road, and she's the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
And so she lives that big time. The other two, not so much. It's tough to save when you're at 20, even if it's $100 a month.
It is. Maybe it's less. Maybe it's $10 for the first couple. I'm just saying, do what you can. The $100 was just a nice round
number.
No, I get
it. The math is incredible.
Let's go to more to what you're supposed to be here for.
Oh, sure. Well, that was fun.
Sorry,
that was good. Thanks,
John. I'm going to jump off my soapbox. There I go back to the ground, and here's Sue. Hello, Sue. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. What's your question for Patrick?
Okay, I'm going to try and keep this as simple as possible.
And then don't say the company's name, okay? Cool.
I'm not going to say the company's name.
Thank you.
Employer hires employee, and they have locations around the country.
Okay.
But first, employee does some travel, and then he says, I really can't do all this travel.
Okay.
employer sends an email saying you're not going to have to do the travel.
Okay, you're good. You don't have to travel, okay?
And, of course, the employer comes back and says, oh, I need you to go to this location and fix this problem.
Hmm.
And he says, look, I told you I can't do all this travel. And he says, go this one time. I'll give you a $2,000 bonus.
Hmm.
Okay. Employee goes, comes back. Employer never pays the $2,000 bonus.
Ooh, that's no good. And that's the, okay.
He doesn't have that in writing. He only has a phone call saying, please go and do this. I'll pay you the bonus.
Great question. Patrick.
Well, hang on. We're not quite
Oh, we're not there yet. Okay, sorry. Keep going. Hey.
So employer tries to send the employee out again to another travel location. She says, look, I told you I can't do all this travel. You told me in an email I wouldn't have to do the travel. You didn't pay me the bonus last time. If you're going to say I have to do this travel, I'm quitting. He says, well, you have to go. He says, fine, I quit. Is this now a forced resignation where he can file an unemployment claim?
All right. There's a lot to unpack there. Patrick, do as best you can in 1 minute or less because we got Joe waiting on a hold too.
Yeah, so if I think the short answer to the last question, unemployment related, is yes, he should file unemployment. I think he would be entitled to unemployment because I think he was quote unquote terminated. I understand there was a voluntary termination, but Illinois Department of Employment Security, which handles these claims, is probably going to rule that he's entitled to it. Now,
what about the missing $2,000?
Yeah, well, that's point number two. I think he's entitled to that. I think, you know, that was an obligation, a bonus obligation, if you want to look at it that way, which would be protected under the Illinois Wage Payment and Collection Act. That's number two. Number three is if he can't travel because of some mental or physical health issue, then maybe there's an accommodation discussion to have, and maybe the company has violated the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Okay.
That's point number three.
Surmise to say Sue's friend, or Sue, if this was her, should be calling you, because there's a few things
there. Yeah, there's at least those three things.
312-332-7800. Sue, I'll say the number a couple more times. I did want to get Joe in here. Joe, we got about a minute. Can you get your question in 20 seconds?
Hopefully, yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so I've got several employees that report into me. One of them is a couple years past retirement age. What are the legal like guardrails for having a conversation with an employee? Like, I don't want to be the guy that pushes him out.
No, you don't.
What are the legal?
Great question. Great question.
Guardrails?
Yeah, go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, it's a really
30
good,
seconds.
Yeah, it's a really good question. So, you can have a discussion about his plans vis-a-vis the job. Like, are you know, if he's doing a good job, assuming he or she is, then you can say, you know, you can ask him about his plans, but you really can't go into when are you going to retire, blah, blah, blah. Because if the job hasn't changed and he's still doing the job,
or she,
and they're doing it well, you're right. You have to be really sensitive, but you can have that conversation though.
Just,
you know, how much longer do you plan to work? That kind of thing.
Joe could call you too and just 100%. Ask for that. 31 Joe, he can help you out there as well. 312-332-7800. Patrick, I got to scoot so much. Thanks so much for bringing here.
All right, John.
Bye.
Bye.
Got news next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Then more Let's Get Legal on WGN.